It is my real privilege to begin the new year with you and begin with a series we've promised that is entitled The Year of Living Intentionally. Now, that doesn't mean that at the end of the year you can stop living intentionally, but I'll get to that in a minute. But we want to start with our goal to live intentionally this year. And specifically today, I'm going to talk about where that begins with is being all in with Jesus. Our goal is to help all of us live intentionally for this week. How about we start there? My goal by the end of this message is that you live more intentionally for the next 7 days. Next week, Renee is going to come and speak, and she's going to try and get you to live intentionally for 7 more days. And then we're going to go for a month, okay? And then our goal is to go for a year. And if you live intentionally for a year, you're going to find it very much easier to live intentionally for the rest of your life. We want this to be happening for a lifetime. We want to stop living accidentally. You know what that's like? That means reactively, where you just deal with what comes at you rather than being intentional. Or doing just what you've done before. Or living non-intentionally would be like to live 2018 over again on repeat. How many want to do that? Our goal is not to live a repeat of 2018, but live intentionally what God's purpose is for you this next year. We want to establish new patterns if necessary, new habits if we need them, new habits of living. In fact, I've read that many new habits can be established in as little as 21 days of consistent practice. That gets it into a groove into your mind and in your habits. So some can begin in as little as 21 days. By February, you could have a new habit established in your life. Now, I've seen lots of good intentions this week and people wanting to live intentionally. One of the ones that most impressed me, we have a friend. She's a woman, mother, wife, and a mother of two grade school-age children. She has gone back to university to complete her college degree. She never finished it. And now she started doing that this last fall, and she realized how difficult that is, raising a family, going to school full-time, and all the other, and keeping the household going. And so during her break before the first of the year, she went through 52 weeks of 2019, and she has planned out every meal her family's going to eat for the whole 2019. How would you feel like now with that relief on you? I don't have to plan another meal. 2019 is already planned. Some of you say, well, that could be boring, you know. It could be rearrange the same 5 meals, you know, every week. But I was very impressed by this, but I wasn't that motivated to make that my goal, to live that intentionally in terms of meal planning. But that was some of what I've seen. We have 6 grandchildren. When you go by the refrigerator in any of my son's houses, and there's on all of them, there's charts. And child's names are on the charts. Any of you got this at your house? And it's as parents, your goal to get your children to live intentionally this year. Okay, here's the things that we expect from you every day. That you're dressed and your bed is made before you come downstairs and for breakfast or whatever is of living intentionally, and you train your children in the ways that you feel are priorities. Did they, or maybe some of them it is, you know, that they've read their Bible if they're of an age where they can read, and they do that at a certain time every day and mark it off their chart. I've seen those charts for daily goals and tasks. Of course, this is the time of year where we see an uptick in new gym memberships. There's some good intentional hopes there. We'll see how that works out. Beautiful day yesterday, wasn't it? I went over and I found out half of Chicago decided to do the same thing, to take an exercise walk along the lakefront, and saw hundreds of people jostling with me, jogging and walking along the lakefront, getting that New Year exercise going in a beautiful day like today. One of the most amusing things I saw in a news report, it was a sign, it was a picture, and it was a restaurant that specializes and is famous for serving good salads. And the problem they had yesterday is the line was going around the block. All these people wanting to start this year right, I'm going to eat more salads. I talked to one person who said, once I saw the lion, I got out. I said, forget this. Let's go get a burger, you know. A lot of intentional living this week, right? Good intentions. But we want to move beyond intentions to living intentionally, just not thinking intentionally. I've had the opportunity over the last 10 years working with churches around the world, and I've seen thousands, reports of thousands of churches worldwide who are living more intentionally. They've started tens of thousands of small groups, and their intention with these small groups is that the individuals going to the small groups will become better and more obedient, more fully devoted in their following of Jesus, or as the Bible uses the word disciple. Disciple is one who models their life after Jesus. They're a copy of Jesus. And so they've started these disciple-making groups, and they do a Bible study called a Discovery Bible Study to more intentionally live as Jesus' disciples. And the way these Discovery Bible Studies work, and there's millions of these going on around the world right now, is that everybody reads a scripture passage, and the goal is not just to understand it and know it and to appreciate it, but at the end of that is to find in that passage an action that I would take in response to this. If this is truly God's truth for me, how should I live or behave differently because of this? And they announce that at the end of the group. After having read this passage, I want to do this. I want to treat this person differently, etc. And you come back to the group next week, and what's the first thing you do? Did you follow through on your intentionally living as a disciple this week in your through this Discovery Bible Study? And this is having a phenomenal effect around the world and all kinds of cultures. Well, I'm taking you this morning to one of my favorite passages of Jesus encounters, three different encounters. This is in the end of chapter 9 of the Gospel of Luke. And it shows how Jesus calling followers to live intentionally. Now, it's interesting. We're going to look at the end of Luke 9, starting with verse 57. But before we get to 57, I just want to point out, if you happen to look earlier in that chapter, in Luke 9:51, you see Jesus modeling living intentionally. There's a phrase that the King James translates this verse this way: Jesus set his face like flint. Now, what that means, and the more modern translations give us an interpretation, that one of the translations says that he resolutely set out for Jerusalem. I mean, I know what's waiting for me in Jerusalem. It's death. It's crucifixion. And it says, but he determined, he made it his intention, because he believed it was God's will, that he would head towards Jerusalem. His face was set like flint. He models in verse 51, living intentionally, knowing that it's going to end up with his sacrifice. And you remember, once Jesus has heard the message from God and news of the Father wanting to go to Jerusalem to be sacrificed, the disciples didn't get on board right away. Most famously, Peter. You remember the situation where Peter, Jesus is getting, I'm going to Jerusalem, and Peter gets in front of him. Oh, Lord! You don't need to do this. Are you sure you need to do this? And Jesus looks at Peter, and what does he call his friend Peter? Satan! Get behind me! Get out of the way! I'm going to Jerusalem. That is my intention. So you can see Jesus is a great model of not being stopped when he's doing the will of God, even if his good friend Peter's there, and he tells Peter basically, I'm calling you Satan because I can tell who's inspiring you right now. Anyway, so that we come to this passage that I call All In with Jesus, my favorite All In passage, starting with verse 57. As they were walking along the road, a man said to Jesus, I will follow you wherever you go. Basically, I will be your disciple. Well, Jesus told him, and in every one of these encounters, it's like as many times in the Gospels, when people ask Jesus a question, he sees the heart that's behind it and knows, and he answers specifically because he knows what the issue is in that person's life. And in this person, he doesn't say this to everyone but who comes to him, but this person, he says, foxes have holes and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to sleep. He says, you want to follow me intentionally, got to count the cost. The road will not be easy. I know what's waiting for me in Jerusalem. And this man says, oh, I want to follow you. And Jesus says, are you sure? Take a measurement. Are you ready for this? Before you follow me, count the cost. Jesus says, I'm not just looking for words of commitment. I will follow you. But what I require is costly action. What God requires is costly action. Jesus sensed that for this man, he may have been making an empty, naive promise. I will follow you. And so Jesus speaks to the deepest part of his heart and questions, have you really counted the cost? Are you really ready to take up what I'm having to face? Following Jesus is not like taking up a new hobby. It's not just believing a new philosophy. It's not just following the latest trend or an old trend. It requires commitment without reservation. And so my description of this encounter with this man is Jesus says, no reservations, no hesitations, no hedging your bets. Count the cost before you step out to follow me. I like the way someone said, there's a great difference between commitment when it comes to making breakfast, the commitment of the chicken versus the pig. You know this story? The chicken commits some eggs. The pig commits some bacon. Jesus says, you got to be ready to make full commitment. The great Lutheran pastor and martyr killed by the Nazis during World War II, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, in his most famous book, The Cost of Discipleship, says, when the Lord bids someone to come, he is asking them and bidding them to come and die. Dying to living for ourselves, for our own selfish ambitions, for our own agendas, and for our own comforts and ease and pleasure. And instead, we come to live for him and his fame and his honor and his kingdom, the very words you used as you prayed today for this coming year. To receive the amazing life that he offers to us, he calls him to follow him, knowing the costs, with no reservations. So if you're taking notes, no reservations. The second passage, verses 59-60, a second encounter, and he calls us to live intentionally with no excuses. He told another man, follow me. A frequent statement of Jesus, follow me. But the man said, notice there's a but there. Jesus gives you an offer, and when you begin your sentence with but, you're getting on the wrong foot, aren't you? Jesus has given you a wonderful offer, follow, come. And he said, but. And Jesus said, I see we have a problem here. The man said, well, first let me go bury my father. We're not even sure the father's sick yet. This man's putting in a delaying tactic. And Jesus told him, and sharply, sometimes Jesus surprises me. He speaks very sharply to some people. It's a way to really grab their attention. He gets at the real core of what's going on in them. And he says, no, let the dead bury their own dead. If you're going to follow me, listen what the core of it is. You must go everywhere and tell about God's kingdom. You must join God's kingdom enterprise and his story and what he's doing. That's what it means to follow me. Don't delay. Don't say, well, I got a few things to take care of first. He says, the first thing you need to take care of is the priorities of your soul. And who is it that you're living for? And don't give me excuses. I love this poster I found. Some of us need to post this somewhere around our lives or for somebody else in our lives. I don't know, you know. All the excuses that we come up, I'm too tired, it's too hard, I'm too busy, it's too early, and Jesus basically says, whatever your excuse is, it's an excuse. No excuses. Come and do the work of the kingdom. Don't let anything get in your way. Well, let me finish school. Let me get a good job and get going, and then I'll make you the first priority in my life, Jesus. You know, let me get a few things sorted out there. And Jesus says, there's an urgency in his voice. Even if you have a situation of in those days of the priority of taking care of your family member who's maybe coming ill, Jesus sees what this man has given him as an excuse. He's saying, well, in those days, it's often interpreted that the man is saying, I need to wait until my father dies. Then I've got all kinds of things to handle with the estate and the funeral rituals and all of that. It's going to go on for a while yet. Jesus, I can't tell you quite when I can start following you. And Jesus says, today is your day of destiny. Today is the day where you set and determine what you're going to do with your life. Today is not the day of excuses. Following Jesus is not just saying, I'm going to make some lifestyle changes. But it is more than that. It's engaging and getting to partner with Jesus in the important world-changing work of the kingdom. He says, today you can enter into with me into this story of the kingdom and how it's unfolding. And so Jesus went this very sharp phrase, let the dead bury the dead. What do you mean, how can the dead bury the dead? What does that mean? Well, most think that what he's saying is let the spiritually dead bury the dead. Those who have time on their hands and they're going to wait out and delay things, they're spiritually dead. They are not living intentionally. They're living reactively. They're living waiting for things to happen before they get around to doing the kingdom stuff. And Jesus says, let those who are spiritually dead do that. You get yourself today engaged in the responding to the invitation to be a part of the kingdom. Following Jesus, he offers us a greater, more compelling and rewarding calling than the spiritually dead experience. Following Jesus is not a task that we just add to our list of other tasks. I'm a husband, I'm a father, you know, I'm a plumber, I'm a lawyer, I'm a carpet maker, I'm a whatever, and I'm a follower of Jesus. Jesus, I don't come in a list like that. No duty, even religious duty, is higher than following him. He's not just another statue to be placed on our mantle, along with our educational diplomas and our sports trophies and our customer sales achievement awards and pictures of our family and maybe our favorite president, you know, Abraham Lincoln or whoever, you know. That's Jesus will not accept a place on the mantelpiece. He accepts the place of Lord of our lives. And it's like folks, some folks, you know, go come to church once a month. Before they take communion, they'll ask for forgiveness, and they might even leave a tip in the offering. Jesus says, that's not living intentionally for me. That's living conveniently for you. Jesus is not willing just to be a part of our lives. Listen, this is the core I want to say. He is either the organizing principle for our lives, the one who holds it together, in whom we live and have our being. He is the most important thing about us. And anything less than that, then he is a cheap, meaningless religious trinket. That's what it means to live intentionally for Jesus. He calls for a certain detachment from our property and our family. Not that we don't have family and property and follow our and take care of it, but we need to be willing to be detached anytime it hinders us from being single-mindedly devoted to Jesus, a devotion that perseveres to the end. You remember when Jesus encountered the rich young ruler, he didn't tell this to every person he met, but when he met the rich young ruler, he recognized right now, this man is really hung up with his stuff. And for you to follow me, he didn't tell all of you this, but he told this man, for you to follow me, you got to sell everything and give it to the poor. That's not a universal message. I mean, it's good that we give a lot to the poor, but this man, he realized you need to sever and break the attachment your stuff has with you. Jesus knew how to discern each person's heart, like he knows how to discern yours and mine. Our excuses often reveal that there is a key obstacle in our lives holding us back. Our excuses often conceal our reluctance to take a decisive step in our kingdom assignment. For this man in verse 59, he wanted to follow Jesus later. Jesus' words indicate a note of urgency versus that spiritually lethal danger of delaying, because delaying means perhaps we will never break free to follow Jesus. As we used to say back in the mountains of Colorado when I was learning to fish with my family, and you're cutting bait and you're getting ready to to prepare the worms and whatever it was for the fishing, but that's where the phrase came from. Sometimes it's that you get to that place, you need to either fish or cut bait. You got to stop cutting bait and start fishing. And Jesus says, it's time to start fishing in the kingdom stuff. Intentionally, living intentionally. One of my most favorite family stories about doing something intentionally. A number of years back, my mother and father flew here 1,000 miles to celebrate my mother's birthday. It happened to be the same birthday as one of my sons. And so I was trying to find a place we could celebrate their birthday. And maybe you don't realize this. I learned just this week that in 1900, 1 out of 4 Chicagoans were immigrants from Germany or descendants of German ancestors. That's how big the German community was in Chicago 119 years ago. So there were German restaurants all over town. Right now, it's kind of hard to find one. But then, a few years back, you could. And one of these German restaurants had celebrating either its 50th or its 70th anniversary or whatever it was that very week. And having a family that liked German food, I saw the advertisement. It says, we are selling all of our plates at 1920s prices this week. So I got on the phone right away, called up. I want to make a reservation for 7 of us for 6 o'clock or whatever on Saturday night and birthday celebration. They took it down fine. What I didn't realize was they did not understand how valuable a deal that would look to be people in Chicago. And within an hour or two after I called, they stopped taking reservations. And they said, we can't handle this. And they told everybody out that you just had to come and wait in line. I didn't know this. So we arrived, families flown 1,000 miles. We arrived at this German, the Golden Ox down on the north side. It was not there anymore, like most German restaurants. And we come up to the restaurant, and there's a line going all the way down the street. I walk up, I managed to get my head in there, and I said, I've got a reservation. And they said, oh, we stopped taking those a long time ago. And I said, but I have a reservation. Well, we would honor it, but there's no way these people are going to let you get in front of them. If they see you getting in front of them, it's going to be problems here. So they kind of put me off. But it was one of those moments on the human side of things that kind of set my face like flint. I said, family, they say that they have our reservation, one of the few that got in, but we can't get there. What are we going to do? I said, follow me. And we traipsed, all 7 of us in a line, went around the block, down the alley, back up to the back door of the restaurant, opened the door to the kitchen. And I said, just follow me. Don't answer any questions. And we're going to go right through the kitchen into the restaurant. So they all just marched in. The chefs are looking up. I said, if you act like you know what you're doing, people won't stop you, you know. And we knew what we were doing. We had a reservation. And we marched all the way up to the back of the reservation stand and tapped on the shoulder of the person. And I said, you got a reservation for Hannah Walt? And the person looks at the line down the street. Yeah, we do. Well, then we're here. And they took us to our table center. We had, you know, schnitzel and sauerbraten and sauerkraut. And we're eating and listening to they had live polka music. It was just perfect birthday gift for my family. It was time to leave. We'd eaten what we wanted, and we get ready to leave. And the waitress comes up and says, here's free strudel for all of you. I want you to stay. You're such a happy group, and nobody out there is happy. I'd rather serve you a little bit longer. So here's free strudel. As you can imagine, it's a favorite family story. But later, Jesus showed me that it will take that kind of intentionality and tenacity to follow him and to take a firm, unshakable grip on his kingdom and all that he's promised and all that you have reservations for. Last group person Jesus meets is in verses 61 and 62. And I call this encounter no compromises. The third person that Jesus encounters in this passage is another one, it says. Another one said, I will follow you, sir, but first let me tell my family goodbye. Well, Middle Eastern goodbyes are not just goodbye. Just jump in. I'm leaving. It's a delaying tactic because these are extensive events that you're going on to. And listen to what Jesus says to this person. He sees the excuse that's in the heart and what's really going on there, and he says something that we've all heard before. Whoever starts to plow and looks back is not fit for God's kingdom. Woo! That very passage inspired an artist to paint a painting, I found, of the plowman. No plowman ever plowed a straight furrow looking backwards. The only way you get a straight one is you keep your eye forward all times. Let us not have hearts that are taken captive by our past. The kingdom has no room for those who look back when we're being called to look forward. Jesus' kingdom cannot be found and it cannot be enjoyed by the half-hearted, but by those who look forward in expectancy, not distracted by the past. In the book of Revelation, Jesus uses this word for the person who looks back. He uses the word lukewarm. Neither hot nor cold. There's no satisfaction ever being lukewarm. Either hot or cold, says Jesus. I love the song that was sung at my baptism when I was 13. I've decided to follow Jesus. No turning back. No turning back. The cross before me. The world behind me. No turning back. No turning back. Though none go with me, still I will follow. No turning back. No turning back. I have decided to follow Jesus. I saved a little time at the end here today because a little over 13 years ago, a young couple came to me and asked me if I would conduct their wedding ceremony. I was honored to do so. And they became very much a part of our church. And as they drew closer to each other and to Jesus and to this church, they decided they wanted to live more intentionally for Jesus, to be all in for Jesus. You've already met the husband earlier, Jeff, who leads our financial small group. But I want you to hear, in their own words, Jeff and Carrie Kirsten's story.
So following him has never led us astray.
Never.
It's not always made us comfortable. It's not always made us happy, but it's never led us astray.
When I was making my own choices by myself, life was very messy. And when I started to rethink where those choices that I was making were leading me, and then started to be open enough to invite God into that, starts changing everything.
During last Lent, Jeff and I took a little bit of a different approach than we had in the past, and we had got a little bit more serious about how we were gonna spend Lent, and Jeff took on a food fast, a pretty significant food fast, and I did as well, not quite as committed as Jeff was. But both of us found Jesus so deeply in that place. For me specifically, he uncovered some really deep levels of shame that I didn't even know I was still hiding and holding on to and covering up. And during some of that time that I had set aside to spend with him, he just really brought that to light. And I was so lucky to have a community around me to help walk me through that and love me through that. And it's still something that I'm working through. But it also makes me a little bit excited about Lent this year. Like what more? I mean, it's still a little bit hard for me, but it's, but what else don't I even know that God wants to do?
And again, just like Carrie's experience, I'm still working through that. And like, where does that take me down the road? I don't know where that's going to go, you know, and I'm excited about what that could look like, and what he'll do with that. But I'm so compelled to just continue to follow him and see where that leads, because where it's led so far has been way beyond my wildest imaginations.
And I don't want this to sound really cliche, but my first thought was that I'm all in on Jesus because he was all in on me. Hmm. That love was so real for me from my first encounter with him, that in some of the darkest places of my life, so whether it was not being able to have children, or it was struggling financially, or struggling in my career, all of, like, places that got really dark for me, I felt like I always had the hope that Jesus promised me from the very beginning. You know, a few years ago, we made a lot of changes in our finances, and we really wanted to be sure that we were honoring God first and foremost, and we hadn't always tithed, and we hadn't always been very generous financially because we didn't feel like we could afford it. We were really struggling financially. And that felt really hard at first.
Really hard.
To just trust and honor what God was calling us to do. And we weren't used to making a lot of sacrifices, right? We were used to just kind of doing what we wanted with our money and not have to worry about any of it. And still today, so it's been 7 years since we got out of debt, and that is so freeing. And still, you know, we don't go on, like, we're gonna go on our first, sort of our first real family vacation. And even that's really on a budget. And it feels sometimes like we see other people who are making different choices, and we see other people, you know, having really extravagant Christmases. There are a lot of people in our lives who don't understand why we're making those choices. And sometimes that makes us question it. I'll just say for me, sometimes I question it. Sometimes I'm like, for crying out loud, let's just go get a car. Other people do this all the time. They just go get a new car. You can make payments, you can finance it. And then we have to, you know, really get rooted in what's the goal and what do we want to do, and how do we want to honor God and the things that he gives us. And that's really what that's about.
Part of this, I feel like he's kind of dragging me down the road. I'm willing to go because every time I go along, I get surprised. I learn something about myself. I learn something about others that I didn't know or thought. In most cases, I thought I knew. I thought I knew what my capabilities were. I thought I knew what other people's, you know, I thought I knew, and I didn't know. And so I want to know. I want more. Like, I'm not satisfied with just this much. And I know that if I remain committed to putting Jesus first in the decisions that I make, and I'm not perfect at it, it's a daily battle. It's, you know, but when I do, he is always faithful. And it brings me hope to see him heal me and heal other people faithfully all the time in all sorts of contexts that seem strange and weird and impossible. He shows up and there's nothing impossible. There's nothing strange. There's nothing weird, at least not strange, impossible, or weird enough to keep him or limit his ability to be able to use it in a, just such a beautiful way. And so, you know, I want him to use me in a beautiful way. I want to be beautiful, and I don't always feel beautiful, you know? So that, you know, at a certain point, I follow him because I trust him, and I trust that he's going to make beautiful what I cannot make beautiful.
The hope that he promised me was a full life. So he's got that figured out. I don't know what that means. And what I think a full life is, I've been wrong. You know, and so, and that's hard for me to say. So I've been wrong about what a full life is for the things that I've always asked for. I have such a full life right now, and it doesn't look hardly anything like I thought it was gonna look. If 20 years ago I wrote my story, you wouldn't even recognize me in it. And so the hope of what Jesus promises about my abundant life that he has written for me, I hold on to that pretty closely.
Thank you, Jeff and Carrie, for your honesty with us there. I hope that you are encouraged, inspired by their steps of intentionality. Let me ask the band to come up for our final song. I believe that in everything there is often a crucial moment. And if that moment is missed, we might never make what would have been a critical, life-changing move. I believe this morning, for some of you here, that year of decision is this year. That day of decision to be more intentional about your relationship with Jesus is today. That time to step up and say, I want to follow him more intentionally and devotedly, whatever the cost. That time is now. I invite you this week to go all in for Jesus and to keep it up for the rest of the month and for the rest of this year and for the rest of your life. When you read the Bible this week, read not just to be informed, but be transformed by asking, what am I supposed to do with this? How should I act? God bless you. I believe God has seen the intention of your heart and is sealing that right now. Everyone else, God bless you as well. Go out and be the church. We'll see you next week.